This is CliffCentral.com.
Dun, 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 dun. It's Cardi B with Bad Bunny and J Balvin. I like it. It's also 7 minutes to seven. All right, before Justice comes bounding in here with the burning platform, let's get some news in. Mubs, have you got some stories for us today?
So I was telling you the other day about how the Minister of Police is trying to crack down on cash in transit heists.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the South African Banking Risk Information Center, there has been an 8% increase in CITs since last year. So there's definitely a problem. And then after Minister Stomach In, Chest Out, a.k.a. Shoot to Kill, made a declaration to go after the people behind these incidents, in the last 24 hours, a total of 14 people, suspects, have been arrested in connection with CIT heists.
Good.
Including the second in command of a syndicate committing cash in transit heist. He's apparently one of the 20 most wanted CIT criminals in the country. And the minister, you know, taking an opportunity yesterday to shine in the spotlight as he told the media that we got him.
Good.
And 13 other suspects.
Good. Becky Taylor is doing all the right things by my estimation. I don't know that anybody is unhappy about his appointment except the criminals. It seems like everybody's more or less on the page that this is a good guy. He seems to have, you know, there was that whole issue. The reason he was dismissed as police commissioner before was because he was in some building deal with Rushabangu or something, and it went south, and he never really got any money out of it, as I understand it. So whether or not he'd done something that he shouldn't have done as police commissioner, he didn't seem to have benefited from it financially. I don't think he got money. So if that's the case, he can't have that hanging over his head. It seems that it was political. It was motivated by his enemies in politics trying to get him out of the way.
And it might be a naive comment to make, but I feel like a few weeks ago we were chatting about the good people in politics. Mm-hmm. He, to me, just comes off as a good person. It's not based on anything. I don't know.
There's a lot, I don't know, he's not a seedy, grimy, yeah, people are going to say, oh, you're so naive and you're so stupid and you believe anything. But the fact is, like, I get sincerity out of him. Mm. Don't you?
I don't know what it is.
Like, Becky Taylor, I get sincerity.
Mm.
The guy seems to me to be, he means what he says. He's like, I'm going to get these guys. I'm going to clean this place up. We need someone like him. And he's fearless. He doesn't look like he's scared of anybody.
No,
he looks like if you go for a meeting with him, you should be scared.
Sure, I'd definitely be afraid of him all day, every day. So he added that explosives were often used, and in at least 71 of the heists that happened this year, to access the vaults in the vans. This is an 184% increase from the 25 attacks with explosives last year. So it would seem the criminals loving their explosives. And in 49 of this year's heists, cars got written off to the damage, amounting to 67 million rand.
Yo.
This is in damages to the vans alone that get targeted. So it's a very costly operation.
Hmm. I'm trying to think still if there's a better way than my grannies and Unos.
Maybe there's someone
with a real solution. Like, we should put, you know how we transport oil around the country in these pipes? Imagine if we had a big tube.
With that infrastructure, having to make that happen. Like grannies and a checkers really makes things simple than building new pipes.
Like a big tube that sucked up all the money from various businesses. You just put it into the tube in the basement of your building, and then it would go straight from there through to the banks.
Because now don't you get extra uneasy when you see one of those cars?
I try to get out of the way. Because you know you're going to be, if there's suddenly a cash and transit gang around the corner and you're in between,
you're
in the way.
Now when we're talking about the use of explosives,
yeah,
count me out.
You know how they approach ATMs And then you just kind of like move away. Oh. You're just like, oh, you guys are here. Sorry, I don't need this ATM anymore. My bad. I'll go to the other shopping center.
Yeah, I'll just drive right out of my way. 15Ks is nothing. Don't worry about me, guys.
I'm sorry for getting in your way.
I always look like such a dodo, but I said I'd rather look like an idiot and be alive.
So when you see them, do you run?
Yeah, you leave. You cross the street. You like, okay, you guys are here. You guys! No. I'm out.
But I feel sorry for those people who are employed by those cash carrying companies. They must be terrified every day.
Mm. It just sounds like bad business because their insurance premiums must be like ridiculous. Absolutely outrageously through the roof. So someone's making a huge loss here. Have to.
I'm surprised there aren't more accidental shooting incidents given that high-risk job. And as you say, these guys are probably terrified standing there, and they've always got their hands ready on their guns. I'm surprised we don't have more incidents of so-and-so caught a bullet because the guy thought that they were about to get attacked or robbed. Yeesh.
Good point.
Nervous people holding guns in public.
Yeah.
Not good.
That's not good. Oh!
In crowded spaces like malls.
Shopping malls. I don't like shopping malls, man. I had to go yesterday. I had to go and get some things. What is it also with... Some people hang around. Now, I know this is a tiny little thing in the scheme of things. This is not a cash and transit heist, but like people, they have no spatial awareness. Yeah, I've brought this up before. If you're walking towards somebody, I mean, even driving in this morning here on our street, right outside the building, I turned at the stop street here, and I'm now heading towards our entrance, and I'm on my side of the road. There's a car coming at me on my side of the road. And I think he must have been looking at his phone or whatever, because maybe, you know, 10, 20 meters in front of me, he looks up and realizes and swerves back into his lane. It's like, no spatial awareness. I've got lights on in my car. He's got lights on in his car. Doesn't see? Not paying attention to the world. People walk in shopping malls, head down, looking at their phone, whatever. They're not seeing anything. And they walk right into you if you don't get out of the way.
Yeah, phones have become such a big distraction.
But I wonder if people would pay more attention if you knew the cash and transit people were nearby.
Then you'd be really observant.
Imagine how you'd be looking around. Well, I'm paying attention now. I don't want to be shot. All right, what else?
So we now have our very first headline out of the PR exercise between Donald Trump and Kim Kardashian.
Oh.
The president of the United States has commuted a sentence of a drug offender after the Kardashian appeal. This is a sentence of a 63-year-old woman whose release had been championed by the reality TV star. Her name is Alice Marie Johnson, 63 years old. She has served nearly 22 years of a life sentence.
Oh, my God.
Would anybody like to take a guess what her crime was?
I hope this is something serious. Otherwise, 22 years of her life is madness.
What did she do? I think she was carrying drugs.
What?
A non-violent drug offense got her a life sentence.
You are kidding me.
And she's now spent 22 years of that life sentence.
And she's in her 60s.
She is 63 years old.
Well, you know what? I thought I'd never say this, but God bless Kim Kardashian.
Well, this is precisely what people get frustrated about is, like, who deserves what punishment and what crime? Where in the world does carrying drugs get you a life sentence?
I mean, Oscar Pistorius will spend less time in jail than she did. Probably Henry von Bredow as well. We find out today. Today's the sentencing. That's wrong. That is so wrong on so many levels. And she's already been in jail 22 years.
She's already been there 22 years. So imagine if Kim Kardashian hadn't intervened. She would have had no attention whatsoever.
What kind of a judge sent someone to jail for life for carrying drugs?
Yeah.
What kind of a judge?
A non-violent drug offense, by the way. So nobody got killed.
I would love to know what son of a bitch this judge was who sentenced her.
What kind of a representative does she have in a legal sense? Someone who was also trying to put her away.
Well, I mean, this is the other problem, isn't it? Is that not everybody can afford the right legal representation.
But
so
even the one that gets appointed to you, how bad can you be?
I mean, that guy probably had a caseload so heavy he didn't know whether he was coming or going. There are all types of situations and excuses given about, you know, the different justice systems and how people like this woman fall through the cracks.
Another sad aspect of the story is that this woman is not the exception.
No.
There are so many other stories like her.
Whew.
People who have even been put into, of course, here's the Oprah mention of the day. Oprah's latest book club selection is the memoir of a man who spent 30 years in solitary confinement and now has come out of prison because it turned out he was wrongfully convicted of
murder.
He was
innocent the whole time?
30 years.
Oh, I'd be
furious. Large bulk in solitary confinement.
Do not put people in jail for 22 years for a non-violent drug offense. That's just insane. Who ever knew that Kim Kardashian would be the savior that this woman never had?
Or Kim Thong-un, as the New York
Kim
Post
Thong-un.
Called.
Right.
Kim Kardashian and Donald Trump. I mean, right. Well, you know, it still needed him
between both of them, bless you two for the first time. I never thought I'd say that about Donald Trump and Kim Kardashian, but here I am.
And look, yes, a lot of people are going to be coming out saying, yeah, it's just a PR stunt. Of course it's a PR stunt. But this woman,
for
this 63-year-old woman, for her, this is a life-changing decision.
Someone says it was probably a third strike offense, but still.
Still, life?
Yeah, it's crazy. No. That judge was a son of a bitch.
Was she selling to children?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. She could be selling to 2-year-old babies. It would still be something questionable, a sentence of life for that. That's insane. Here's one. I Am Dipster says, when I am in the mall, I am in complete fuck you mode. I get out of the way for no one. So it's not about spatial awareness. That's to our point earlier. And someone says they shared a lift with Mr. Kele last week at Winnie Tutu General Airport. Which, of course, we still have to decide what Cape Town Airport's called.
Oh.
In amongst all the real situations going on in South Africa, this is a big deal. But
General Airport.
Let me just get back to this quickly because this is interesting. 8 p.m. at night, Mr. Tele looked suited up, organized. He looked the business. He had minimal security hanging around him. A kind, hardworking man. So, there's a fan of Becky Tele.
You know, if I got stuck in a lift with Minister Trele, I would ask for a selfie. I'd be that
for
person.
Sure. Yeah,
I'd be like,
we like
can we take this picture?
No, we like him.
Is he going to say no to me? No.
All right, let's get on with it. We've got Justice Malala here. It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Your weekly dose of all the important stuff that's going on in politics, in society, in the economy, and sometimes Justice's observations about other interesting things that we could talk about. So here it is, just for your pleasure, Mr. Justice Malala. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you guys?
Yeah, good. 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 Mabali's missed you. She said you haven't been live here for a while.
I haven't seen you in the longest time.
Oh, I'm here.
So, Justice.
Hot, spicy.
Lots to talk about hot and spicy today. I see. The EFF continue to do themselves no favors with the media, and Floyd Shivambu has been ranting like a racist. And is this something we should be surprised by?
No, you know, I've thought and thought. Can we just talk about, you said something that I thought was interesting. You talked about the Cape Town International renaming.
Mm.
And that's a campaign that Julius Malema, Floyd Shivambu, the EFF has been very big on.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, I popped into Vanderbijl Park. Can I?
Vanderbijl Park. Where is that again?
Park. It's in south. It's south. It's on the Vaal River.
Oh, it's where those industrial the flames come out of the top of the.
Yeah. That's right. Where Sasol and them are. Sasol
like Mordor, basically.
Can I just say, you know, the stuff we don't talk about. If you go to Vanderbijl Park, and I know, when I was a far younger guy than I am now. Uh-huh. Friends of mine worked for Sasol, Eskom, so I'd go to that area and, you know, wherever you went, you had you had refuse removal working. You had all sorts of, this is 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city seemed to work a bit.
Right.
And, you know, I know people talk about, oh, you know, apartheid before then and so forth. Yes, but we'd come out of that anyway. But stuff worked. If you go to, I don't know who the mayor of Emfuleni is, and this is the municipality there, but it's disgusting, okay? It's disgusting to go to Vanderbijl Park. You see refuse on the streets. It looks like refuse hasn't been picked up in that town for months. People throwing refuse on the streets. There's mountains of it all over.
Oh, my God.
People tell me that oh, the water is you can't drink it. You drink it at your own risk, basically.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's people are drinking bottled water from there. And I stood there and thought, jeepers, man. You know, we hear all these stories about... the Auditor General says so many of these municipalities got a qualified audit, da, da, da. And we spoke about it, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Where I think out of the 257 municipalities, only about less than 30 got a clean audit. And that means that, you know, they run their finances well. You know, it's bad out there. Our municipalities are falling apart and all this stuff. So I sometimes wonder what are our priorities, but also not just to blame politicians. You know, what's wrong with just keeping stuff clean? You know, just the streets clean. Yeah, I was disgusted. I was there yesterday.
But Justice, you can drive around pretty much anywhere in the Gauteng area and you will see a mess. It upsets me that we just seem to drop shit wherever we want. And every if you look at the sides of the highways.
Oh, no, it's terrible.
It's horrible.
No, I think that...
Why do we expect someone else to go and do that?
Yeah, I mean, I still find it amazing when people say to me, oh, you know, I'm creating jobs because people have to pick that up. It's just extraordinary. But, you know, I went to this town and I felt so deeply... totally depressed by what I saw. The combination of lack of political action in that municipality, plus the just what are ordinary people saying? You know, on my way here this morning, lots of lights don't work. Traffic lights don't work. And the Joburg Roads Agency, which I've been following for a bit now, you know, has to take responsibility for that. But I think something is happening with our municipalities. And this is where ordinary service delivery happens. But it's a mess out there. And I think politically, the ANC in particular, which controls many of these municipalities, needs to wake up and say, you know, what's going on here.
But we are focused on renaming airports, which affect maybe 5% of the population.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, do you want to rename Cape Town International? You know, I'm not particularly obsessed with it. I find it, the EFF has decided that Winnie Mandela is an organizing point, and they will continue to push for her. I'm amazed that we're having that discussion anyway. But go ahead and rename it. But my word, it would be so nice to actually see a municipality that works and a focus that says it's about ordinary people.
Yeah.
The people of those townships around Vanderbijl Park, you know, many people don't. We have bottled water on our desks and da 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 in these urban
areas.
Imagine
not being able to drink water.
What do you do? I mean, people boiling water in this day and age, it's horrific.
So, I mean, the EFF could really go out there and score a very easy political victory by telling people they'll sort that out.
Maybe they should be doing more of that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm actually feeling sad about all the political parties. No one seems to be saying, we spoke about the Northwest. When we spoke about this, we spoke about the Northwest in particular. And that's where I know, you know, that municipalities have collapsed. In fact, in the Northwest, not a single municipality got a clean audit.
Yep.
All of them. All, basically, any town in the, you drive through, you go through in the Northwest, is being run badly. Every town, you are, say Mahike and say Ventersdorp, say anywhere, it's being run badly. Money is being spent without being accounted for. And many of them actually don't have running water right now. So I do wonder about what are our priorities here? What are we about, really? What's South Africa about if we're going to be so? You have to wonder, what's this about? But political malfeasance is a big part of it. Jacob Zuma appointed to this portfolio, can you guess, Des van Rooyen?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, who's Des van Rooyen going to hold accountable? This is a guy who went to the Gupta family home 7 times in 7 days before he became finance minister. And we know what he did when he got to National Treasury. He wanted to just sign off on Gupta-linked deals. So, you know, we don't seem to be serious about the things that we need to be serious about. And that is delivering for ordinary people in these municipalities like Vanderbijl Park, like so many others. In Hammanskraal, where I come from, and Solim Simanga needs to get up now and do something. People haven't had water for months. What's he doing about it? This is the real stuff that politicians should be doing something about. I'm actually quite angry. If you look at Joburg, okay? My word, Joburg, what's wrong with this town? For years and years, you have a drop of rain, okay? You have a drop of rain and traffic lights don't work. Is it genius that needs to walk in and solve the problem that we can't have gridlock just because there's been some rain? What's wrong with these guys? You know? You know, just drive out to see her. Just take a drive just down the road. Boom! The traffic lights don't work. Everywhere in Johannesburg. Everywhere. This is like a world-class city, we are told. By word. I find politicians amazing. I find it incredible.
You're furious.
Jeez.
Anyway. All right, let's get back to Floyd now.
Yes.
What did he say?
So, Floyd Shivambo sits in the Finance Committee in Parliament. Ismail Momoniat, who is a deputy DG at National Treasury, comes through as usual to give reports on this is what we are doing, this is how we do it, and so forth. Floyd Shivambo jumps up and down and says, Why is this one not in this committee? Where are the African leaders of National Treasury? He goes on to say, you know, and you, this Momoniat is a problem. He has been sidelining African leadership and undermining African leadership in National Treasury. So first of all, can I just say, in South Africa, you know, first of all, Nhlanhla Nene is the Minister of Finance. Dondo Mokgatjhane is the DG appointed by Malusi Gigaba. There are many other incredibly smart, qualified, clever people who work at National Treasury. To actually say, oh, Ismail Momoniat is in this committee appearing here because he basically said, Sia, you don't go. But Sia is the guy senior. You don't go. You sit there. I'm going. It's an insult to Nhlanhla Nene, to Dondo Mokgatjhane, to think that they are told by a junior to them in terms of rank. At the National Treasury. No. Gareth Cliff, you sit there. I'm going.
But it tells you something about how Floyd views his own identity. It tells you something about Floyd's own insecurities about being a black man.
Yes.
And it tells you how he views other black people, which is if it were a white person, it would be easy to understand. This is a lot more complex.
He basically thinks every black person out there is sitting there shaking because there is a white person or an Indian person next to them, and that they can be told, you go and do this, you go and do that. I found it so insulting towards Nhlanhlane, Dondo Mokgatjhane, and all these other incredible, amazing people at National Treasury or anywhere for that matter. It's amazing. But there's a political aspect to it, and the political aspect is this. The EFF makes these racist utterances, continues to act in a racist manner, and we and I include myself in the media, seem to want to give them a free pass. Floyd Chivambo doesn't come up smelling of roses in anything. If you think this is the guy who beat up a journalist because the journalist took pictures of him just a few months ago, and he's walking, swanning around like, oh, it's all okay, I'm a nice guy, da, da, da. It's not okay. You beat up someone. But anyway, his leader, Julius Malema, tried to get rid of Athol Trollip at Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality. When he went there, he didn't say, oh, Athol Trollip is a bad mayor, he can't fix the traffic lights, the refuse removal is bad, da da da. He went there and said, we are going to cut off the throat of whiteness. And May went on to make all sorts of other things. In fact, he gave a big speech thinking that he's going to achieve this, in which he attacked the media, attacked everyone, but specifically attacked white people. And do we do anything? Do we say anything and call him up? When some of us called him a fascist and racist, he went on to say, oh, you know, these people support white monopoly capital and so forth and so forth, which in itself is rubbish. But the EFF needs to be called up and pulled up and be told that you can stand for whatever. You can criticize Jacob Zuma. You can stand for whatever you stand for, but you're not going to be racist. But you're not going to be allowed to get away with it.
This is what the EFF really are.
This is what they are at the heart of it. If you know, this is not new. This goes back. And Julius Malema, Floyd Chivambo, others have made these remarks again and again, and they think they can get away with it. They mustn't be allowed to get away with it. And quite frankly, I think that Floyd Chivambo, and he's been defending himself over these utterances. And he goes on to then start actually wanting to, what shall I say, impugn the integrity of Ismail Momoniat.
He doesn't have great struggle credentials.
I mean, this is someone who was in Operation Vula. So, anyway, it doesn't matter. If Ismail Momoniat had been born yesterday, he is a South African of Indian descent, nothing should stop him. This is a guy who's got a degree in mathematics and an economics master's, who's done, when people were not speaking up about the Guptas, at National Treasury, this is the man who was speaking up. Where was Floyd Chivambo? Floyd Chivambo was by Jacob Zuma's side. We mustn't forget that. And so to actually start attacking the guy on his struggle credentials is rich coming from Floyd. And I found the whole thing so offensive and so revealing of the EFF that this is what they are. They're fascist, they're racist. And quite frankly, you know, the EFF needs to also come clean on where it stands on corruption. This is a man who again and again has stood up on corruption, and someone has pointed out, I think it's Polly van Wyk in the Daily Maverick, pointed out that this is the man who, when in Limpopo, where Julius Malema was based, that province was put under administration because of corruption. This is the man who was at the heart and center of saying enough of that corruption. Is this payback time? Are they targeting people who fight corruption? because it was sexy to stand up and say, oh, Jacob Zuma was this, Jacob Zuma was that, and so forth. Now, Jacob Zuma's gone, and we have to face up to the corruption that's been going on. Are they on the side of people who are fighting corruption? Or, you know, are they going to be revealed as the people who've always flirted with or been involved in corruption? I think he needs to tell us that, and we need to know.
Oh, but don't expect that in a hurry.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not, you know, this is the EFF. It's let's just say convenience is their catchphrase.
Now, I know this isn't news to you or to a lot of our listeners who heard you say this some months ago, but when you undermine the economy by talking about expropriation without compensation, don't be surprised when your economy shrinks.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's very sad that we're going through this. You know, we talk about 27.7% unemployment 2 quarters ago. It's now 26%. But the truth is this, economy needs to grow. And so the numbers that came out, that's to say, telling us a few days ago, that the economy has shrunk by 2.2%, which is the worst movement it's done since in 9 years. The key for me is, once again, what are we doing and what are we doing wrong? And we need to be a little bit more honest with ourselves and say, how did we get to this place and how do we make it better? I think, well, there's several aspects to it. The first one is, a lot of people have said it's the end of Cyril Ramaphosa and Ramaphoria and so forth and so forth. I don't think so. I think that Cyril Ramaphosa became the president on February 14. Well, Jacob Zuma left on February 14. Happy Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Cyril Ramaphosa became president a few days later. So, you know, this was right in the middle of the first quarter. So I don't think it's really him, and I think it's unfair. But if you look deeper into the numbers and why we are where we are, with that shrinkage of the economy, a huge chunk of it is because the key sectors have been allowed to deteriorate and become political football. So talk of expropriation of land without compensation, you'll notice that, again, you know, this is where the contractions are. If you look at the numbers, mining was given to Msebenzi Zwane.
Mm-hmm.
Msebenzi Zwane essentially started breaking it apart with his mining charter talk, which was he didn't consult anyone and so forth. People who are in mining started saying, I'm going to go and put my mine in Côte d'Ivoire or in Australia even, or in Canada, because I know what happens next. In South Africa, I don't know what the BEE regime is. I don't know what the laws are going to look like in the future and so forth. And so you look at what happened in the first quarter of this year. Mining.
Agriculture, mining's down 9.9%. Agriculture down 24.2%. That's huge. That's the biggest part of it.
That's the biggest part of it. And so you say, these are the areas where we have not been clear politically. We have not been clear on policy. We have not said, this is what we believe in. This is what you're going to do. If you're an investor, this is the environment you're coming into. If you think about agriculture, and that's, as you point out, that's the biggest decline. If I am some international grain trader, wheat trader, or, you know, whatever, am I going to come and say I'm going to invest in South Africa, or am I going to go elsewhere? I'm going to wait and see, because I don't know what exactly we're doing on agricultural land. Are we going to expropriate with compensation, without compensation, expropriate at all, as we've been doing for 24 years? No, we don't know.
But since you brought it up, let's just go into one or two other categories, because manufacturing is down 6.4%, trade is down 3.1%, construction is down 1.9%, electricity down 0.5%, and the only area that grew significantly is government. Government went up by 1.8%. The one thing we don't need, that always costs us more in the long run, has increased.
But think about what's happening now with the wage, public wage, wage sector negotiation. You will probably find that there will be more money spent on the public service than we've seen recently. And the impact on of that on the fiscus. I saw the Public Service Association, I think it was yesterday, saying that they want a 10% increase and so forth. If that's what they'll get, or anywhere near that, then we are going back to those figures that Malusi Gigaba showed us last year. And those figures say, you know what? You're spending your way to absolute and total decline. You are in trouble. So you know, those numbers are not insignificant. And I think politically, Cyril Ramaphosa has to really begin to show that we've cut with those Zuma practices. But if he doesn't, then those numbers will continue. I hope for his sake he does something about it. But that is the key thing. If you say manufacturing has declined, I think you gave the number 6.4 or something like that.
Yes.
Let's take manufacturing. Manufacturing means that if you drive to Port Elizabeth or to Roslyn in Tshwane, that's where people make things. That's where BMW is put together. When we say manufacturing has declined, it means South Africa has stopped making things. And when people don't make things, there are no jobs for ordinary people.
Right.
This I don't know.
The government can't employ us all.
This is the problem. Thinking that, no, government must do this. Government must create the environment for people like BMW or Volkswagen or whoever to make things in South Africa. And we seem to think, oh, you know, anyway, this is what it means. We should actually have a little workshop for government leaders. I mean, how complicated is this stuff, really? I don't get it.
While we're talking about government workers, can we talk about Aaron Motsoaledi?
Why are you looking at Sienna?
Because we were discussing Aaron Motsoaledi earlier, and, you know, he's in the doldrums now. There are these reports that the public health service is on the brink of collapse. He issued a statement yesterday, or his department officially did, the Department of Health, to say, no, everything's okay. These are how our rollouts of ARVs are going. This is how the public hospitals look. But there's a lot of concern.
Yeah.
This is people's first call if they get sick.
You know, I mean, this is something that I've always been very, very angry about. But the Office of Health Standards Compliance issued a report, and it says only 5 of the 696 hospitals and clinics it inspected in South Africa in 2016-17 actually comply with the norms and standards to achieve an 80% pass mark.
How many?
Only 5 of the 696.
There are 5.
So what we have is essentially a system where you're sitting there and out of 696, jeez, only 5.
We thought the municipalities were bad. We're only 7%. This must be like 1%.
This is
1.5%.
So, you know, I mean, this is not a sexy topic, actually. And the EFF, to their credit, at the beginning of the year, started a campaign saying we are going to do something about the health sector. But Aaron Motsoaledi has to admit that the health sector has collapsed, and it's collapsed. Look at the Northwest. We spoke about this, and the easiest and simplest example is to say, if I'm HIV positive and I get my one pill or my regime of pills from the government, and I have to take that once a day, if you were in the Northwest the past few months, you couldn't go and pick up your pills. If you were a TB sufferer or if you had some other chronic disease, you couldn't walk into many hospitals in the Northwest because they were blockaded, because they didn't function, because of that. If you had Charlotte Maxeke, the workers themselves, the nurses are burning stuff in front of you. So in Gauteng, for example, there are so many people from other provinces who come to Barra, come to Tembisa Hospital, come to all these hospitals. They are just overloaded. They can't cope with the volumes. Plus, there are people coming from Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, many other countries, Zambia, to come and be treated in these hospitals. And at the end of the day, the Hippocratic Oath, so forth, you can't turn people away. So we do have a crisis here, but the worst about this crisis, and we've sort of in the past spoken about this, you know, I feel sorry for Aaron Motsoaledi. You know that Aaron Motsoaledi can't turn around to them. Let's say that Danny Mahlangu was the MEC for health, if I remember, here. He can't fire an MEC for health. In KwaZulu-Natal, the MEC for health, if you have cancer in KwaZulu-Natal, you're going to die because none of the hospitals, all the oncology departments have died. Unless you have medical aid and you go to a private hospital, if you're an ordinary black person living in Umbumbulu or wherever, you're going to die because there isn't a single place in KwaZulu-Natal where you can be treated in the public health sector. When this emerged and the machines were sitting there, the MEC for Health had done nothing about it for years, and Motsoaledi couldn't fire the guy. So the big problem with health and education, actually, in South Africa, is that we have a situation where we gave health and we gave education to the provincial authorities. And that is why the MEC for Health in the Free State, Mabale, you'll be very interested. The former health MEC in the Free State once went to a hospital and kicked off someone, CS relative, from a bed and took over the bed and gave it to a friend of a relative of his. Just like that. It's because we said in the negotiations between 1990 and 1994, how do we give the provincial barons some power? And we gave them the most important thing, health, and we gave them the most important thing, education. So the education authorities the one thing that I regret in some of my political commentary in the past, I used to go after, I can't tell you how many times I made Njimo Saha the loser of the week when she couldn't deliver textbooks to learners in Limpopo. I was wrong about that. It was the MEC for education in Limpopo, because education, the minister can say all kinds of stuff. All she has to do,
provincial, they administer
the provinces, yeah, have absolute power. They have to transport, they buy, they do this. The national ministry just sets the curriculum, but they can't do anything. She can't fire, she can't hire, she can't do anything. And the MEC for education in any province ends up being some guy, mainly a guy, who doesn't know what he's doing, has no relationship with education, and is being rewarded for being politically, have a constituency or
to
something.
To connect, he knows people in high places.
So you go to the Eastern Cape, you go to KZN, you go to Gauteng and so forth. Many of these guys, except for maybe Banyaza Lisufi, have absolutely no connection to, say, education or health. And that is why Aaron Motsoaledi is in trouble. But I have to say, Aaron Motsoaledi also has to take some responsibility. Since 2009, he's been banging on about, we're going to have national health insurance and so forth. Tell me, how do you convince someone who does have private medical aid or someone who works for government, who is on government medical aid, GEMS.
Yeah.
Who's on jams that? No, go to the your local Jubilee Hospital or to Umbumbulu Hospital when they can go to a private hospital. It's not going to work, this NHI thing. When I, if I live in KwaZulu-Natal, I know that I won't get treated for cancer. That if I go on the national health scheme that he's spoken about, then, you know, that's it. It's curtains for me. So quite
well,
frankly...
Also, you can't spend your money now. You get a huge piece of the budget every year, and health doesn't run properly. We've got five hospitals that are working out of...
Five out of 696.
So how would we be... How would it help the people of South Africa if more money is mismanaged by the health department instead of less? I don't see this as being a positive outcome.
No, it doesn't sound positive.
So this kind of puts national health insurance on the back burner, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, how are we going to implement this when who's going to go to any of these 696 hospitals if only five of them actually work enough to get an 80% pass mark? The rest are failing. And I think Aaron Motsoaledi, I don't think, Kosati says he should be fired. I don't think he should be fired, but I think he needs to pull up his socks like so many of his colleagues. But really, he's, you know, at the end of the day, people are saying, let's change the constitution. Actually, the ANC should use its 62%, get together with the EFF and change the constitution. Take away powers from provincial politicians on health, and maybe you'll begin to see some changes. Because quite frankly, Motsoaledi would have fired that guy in KwaZulu-Natal who sits there while multi-million rand oncology machines are sitting there and he can't get them to work.
Gathering rust and dust.
Exactly.
Okay, so your favorite person, we haven't given him much airtime in a long time. Just pop on those headphones, Justice, because you need to hear his actual words here. I know you've missed him on the burning platform, but here he is. Gedlehlekisa.
They must not provoke me.
That's at a Congress of South African Students. Shame, it's nice that someone will have him. And there he is singing Umshiniwam and saying, they must not provoke me. What does he mean?
You know, we need to have a conversation. What do we do with all these discarded presidents that we have? Because I think we're going through... What do young people say, Sia? Please help me. We are going through the most.
Yes. We are going through the most, Mr. Malala.
We're going through the most. I mean... With this man, we are going through the mostest, I think. I don't know what to say, you know? So, Jacob Zuma, as we said earlier, Valentine's Day, says goodbye, and then a few days later, Cyril becomes president. But this guy has been amazing. So, he's no longer... So, the ANC has a thing in its constitution, and they were trying to be nice. So the thing says, if you're a former president of the ANC, you're automatically a member of the National Executive Committee of the ANC. No one has taken Nelson Mandela, you know, 1997 stops being ANC president, 1999 stops being ANC party president, steps down. You don't see the guy pitching up at ANC National Executive Committee meetings. Thabo Mbeki leaves, you don't see the guy pitching up. You know, you let the guys who've taken over take over and run with it. Jacob Zuma is there.
You also, by the way, you don't exactly retire into squalor.
No. Jacob Zuma earns 3 million rand, I think, plus 3 million plus rand a year.
He could just sit at home.
Plus bodyguards, plus an office, plus
transport,
staff,
accommodation,
transport,
all kinds
everything
of things,
he yeah. wants. Tickets
Free
to
flights
Cape,
everywhere.
Everywhere. I mean, you know, you got it. You've got it all. Oof. You don't need to be running around and doing those things. But Jacob Zuma, he's at meetings. The other day, I decided to get off my butt and actually do something. So I went to the ANC's Land Summit just to check it out. Guess who's sitting in the front row? Ah, it's Jacob Zuma. It's like, guy, go home and relax. But no, he's stalking Ramaphosa. Wherever Ramaphosa is, there he is. Like, you know, it's like one of those horror movies you tend to like when you're 13, 14.
Why do you think he's doing this?
I think
he's fermenting. He's trying to create division, rancor.
Yeah. Jacob Zuma doesn't go off like our former presidents, whether it's Mutlante or whoever.
Mbeki, they just quietly go and publish articles every now and then.
Exactly, and think deep thoughts about the state of the continent and the world. He has a big problem. Today's the 7th. Tomorrow he's in court for corruption and so forth and so forth. Jacob Zuma is a man whose ghosts are coming back to haunt him. All these cases, all these things that have happened are coming back, and something's gotta happen. So how else can he stay out of power? Jacob Zuma realized that. How else can he stay out of jail? He realized one thing during his tenure in office, and it's that political power gives you the ability to manipulate here and so forth. So if someone that he wants is back in office, well, will Sean Abrahams continue to pursue him? No. Otherwise, it will be old Sean. Baba, you'll be out of a job. More, this aspect. So he's fighting back and he's fomenting dissent against Ramaphosa and essentially wants to get his own supporter or even himself back into office. And I think that's what's happening here. That's why he's pitching up. If you open a bottle of wine today and say, Jacob Zuma, will you come to the opening? He will be there singing.
Let's invite him here for a discussion.
You should, actually. Yeah. It should be fun.
All right, let's see.
Yeah, see, I get on it. Let's see whether the most can work for this show.
By the way, Justice, we were talking earlier about renaming Cape Town Airport, and someone sent me a picture of what they think Cape Town International Airport should be called. It should be called Joe Masapus International Airport. The locals will love it.
Wow.
So there's an important thing for the Burning Platform this morning. Tell me about Busisiwe Mkhwebane. She just does not care.
I couldn't
wish for a more polar opposite to the former public protector than this one.
Every time I see the former public protector, I sit there and say, my word, we are beautiful. We are amazing. I mean, that woman, do we actually realize that, you know, that we were in the midst of, sometimes I sit there and I look back on my interviews with her and I think, jeepers, Justice, do you realize that you were in the presence of something mighty here, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Tulima Donsela was amazing, fantastic. And now all we've got is Busisiwe Mkhwebane. So Parliament calls her to come and account on various issues. At 5 p.m. on Tuesday, she then says, oops, sorry, I've got a family emergency. I can't rearrange. I'm not coming. Her deputy, Kevin Malunga, says, I didn't know that there was even a meeting. I only read about it in the press on Wednesday morning. So he was sitting in his office in Pretoria. But she basically just said, I'm not going to appear in front of you and go jump in the lake.
Wow.
So,
Batabile Dlamini's done that before. Who else tells Parliament to get out?
Exactly. And you look at the series of who it is. Dudu Mieni, when she was chair of
SAA. Oh, that's another
one,
yes, that's right.
All the sort of Gupta-linked Zuma appointees are very big on running away from accountability. And I think it just... What happened with Busisiwe Mkhwebane on Tuesday is exactly what happens. And MPs were jumping up and down on Wednesday, yesterday. But I think it just shows you what we're dealing with here. And what we're dealing with are the remnants of that, of the state capture gang. And increasingly it says, when are we going to clear out more of these guys? If you listen to that beautiful interview that Francis Heard did on the SABC with, I mean, we don't watch the SABC, all of us, but, you know, it gets to you. But she had an interview with Batabile Dlamini in which Batabile Dlamini is asked a simple question about her portfolio, and she says, you know, Batabile then answers that you wouldn't do this to a man, interrogate him like this. It's like, answer the question instead of, you know, making yourself out to be a victim and to be a representative of
disempowered women.
Disempowered.
You're one of the most privileged, influential women in the whole country.
The president of the ANC Women's League can't answer a simple question about gender issues. It's like, come on.
That's because she can't answer a simple question.
Period. Yeah. So I sat there and thought, what is this person still doing in cabinet? And you can see what we, over the next few months and years, we have to deal with. This state was so corrupted. Something has to happen to clear it out. And I think the Mkwebanis, the Batabile Dlaminis, the Sean Abrahamses of this administration, at the political level and at the state level, you can see there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. Mseven Zizwane might have left, Des Van Rooyen might have left, but my word, there are so many of them that still need to go.
They're lurking
all over. So, you know, it's a long road we have ahead of us.
Just quickly, if Julius Malema does get to nationalize property and he does get to take people's land away without compensation.
Yes.
Where do we start? I mean, who are the big landowners in politics?
I enjoyed this. So, you know, every year we have this thing where politicians declare their property ownership and so forth and so forth.
And our president is a very wealthy man.
Yes.
You know this.
So,
how many properties does Cyril have?
Cyril has 32 properties that is declared, okay?
32
properties that is declared. But you'll remember that 2-3 weeks ago, Julius Malema invited members of the press to his office and said, you know, and someone asked him, so what about residential property? What are you going to do with Mabale's townhouse in somewhere in Midrand there? And he said, we're going to take the land on which that townhouse is sitting. And we, you know, we'll make a little calculation. You and Julius Mabale will be sitting there saying, okay, so I bought this property for 750K. The value of the land was so much. So now my bond, I'm only left with 250 to pay. You're going to get a big discount from Julius as he takes the land on which your property sits. From you. So that's the EFF's position on land, nationalize on land and so forth. So I was just thinking about whose land are they going to take? So Cyril has 32 apartments and townhouses listed under his name. So those will go to the state.
Ooh,
and he'll be left with the buildings, but the land on which they stand would go to an EFF-led administration. there are other people. The late struggle stalwart Winnie Madikizela Mandela declared 4 properties under her name, 3 in Soweto, while the fourth one is in Cape Town's near Chapman's Peak. That's a nice packet. ANC MP Millicent Manana, 17 properties to her name. Well, they're in Witbank. I don't know if you want to go.
No, there. I think it's okay. She can have those.
Yeah. The DA's Michael Bahrain, he has 15 properties in Cape Town. We'll have that.
Wow. That's nice.
Dennis Gameda of the ANC, 8 properties.
Hmm.
2 of them are shops.
Okay.
Musiwa Lekota
is are shops.
Musiwa Lekota of Cope.
Yeah.
He's got a agricultural land in Jacobsdal.
Okay.
And business premises in Orange Farm.
Does he count? Is he black enough to count for, black farmland in the Free State? Because we know the Guptas had a very strict regulation for who can have. They were the only people who were meant to benefit from those policies.
Well,
we know from the Istina dairy farm.
Yes. I think he qualifies, but he's got interesting views on the whole expropriation thing.
Mm.
He has 5 residential properties and another piece of land intended for development of residential property. Mm, interesting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Most of us are lucky if we have one piece of property, but it seems these politicians are amassing
quite a
portfolio.
Yeah, quite a portfolio there. Mm. But Cyril is way ahead. So maybe, the ANC position on expropriation of land without compensation is very interesting in that the ANC doesn't want to take away all land. It doesn't want to take away residential property if it's being used. So Mabala is safe under an ANC government.
Mm-hmm.
But an EFF government wants to take all land. All land in South Africa will belong to the state. And then you will negotiate with an EFF administration afterwards. And you take that.
But do we still have to pay our bond?
Yes, but according to Julius...
So I have to pay the bond, but I don't own the land. So what if I own a piece of land with a very small dwelling on it, let's say a 1-bedroom, with maybe a bathroom outside? I'll own that, but I won't own the land.
You won't own the land.
But I've paid for the land.
Yes,
Julius. Will I get that money back?
No. Oh. Julius is going to expropriate without compensation. That's what he's aiming for. Can I just say on this expropriation without compensation issue? By the way, we're all talking about it as if it's going to happen. What's the word?
Imminently.
imminently. No, it's not going to happen imminently because... Remember, to change the constitution, you need a 2/3 majority.
Mm-hmm.
So that means 66.6%, right? So the ANC and the EFF together have more than 66% because the ANC has 62, the EFF has 6.3.
All right.
But to change the Bill of Rights, and Section 25 is part of the Bill of Rights, you need 75%.
Yes.
So you need the ANC, the EFF, PAC, AZAPO, everyone to support the motion. And then you need the provinces in the NCOP to support the motion. So in fact, that 75%, if you look at it, if you look at who doesn't want expropriation without compensation, you've got the DA at 22%, you've got COPE, you've got the IFP, because they don't want the king's land to go, and so forth and so forth. So in fact, that number 75% is the number that the EFF needs to aim for. And I'm not sure that they can make it. So we're going through this hoops and jumps and so forth, but can 75% of the MPs in the National Assembly agree to this? And I don't think there is enough. The ANC itself is Cyril Ramaphosa going to vote for expropriation without compensation?
Not for those 32 properties. And just quickly, this came in. This is sort of breaking news. The Supreme Court of Appeal has dismissed former SABC COO Claudie Motsoeneng's leave to appeal with a punitive cost order.
Ooh.
Remember, Ubaba loved him so much.
So much.
But he's now got to personally pay all the legal costs for firing the SABC 8 journalists.
Ooh.
And a warrant to be issued to have his assets seized.
Ooh.
It always ends in tears.
Oh, can't we have that song? Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
He wants it? All right. Well, let's find a reason to
when
be happy.
Saudi was.
All right. I think that's plenty to chew on for the burning platform today.
But can I just say, I mean, we can learn so much from the young. Sia, don't you guys also have another one? Kama is a bitch.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know. Are doing the most this morning, Mr. It's Banana.
Something else. Something else.
Coming up, Mbonga Ningema. I'm very, very pleased to have in the studio this morning.
Oh, my word. Please play the greatest love song ever composed.
I will.
Stimela Sosezola. Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's right. Mbonga Ningema is coming to join us in the next little while, and he's here to talk about a new project that he's involved in, Waza Albert, which we will talk about, back by popular demand at the Joburg Theatre, the production showing at the Fringe Theatre from Friday the 1st of June until Sunday the 17th. This man is incredible, has been awarded his first of many, I'm sure, Lifetime Achievement Awards at the SAMAs, which of course took place over the last weekend, and President Ramaphosa had to accept it on his behalf because he was late, which is hilarious. But we're going to speak to Mbonga Ningema in the next couple of minutes. He's, of course, a writer, lyricist, composer, director, and theatre producer of international repute and renown. That's on the way. Justice Malala, thank you very much, sir.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Please, please, you cannot interview Mbonga Ningema without playing Stimela Sasezola. Oh, oh, my word.
All right.
Please, I'm begging you.
Gush so much, Mr. Malala.
Now, you know, Mabala said she'd take a selfie with Becky Kale. I'm sorry, I'm going to ask for a selfie when I go outside.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you. I'm going to have a picture taken and send it to my mum and dad, and they're going to be so proud of me.
Mabala is very judicious about which of our guests she takes a picture with and sends to her mum and dad. There have been a few.
My parents have very high standards.
I think the last one was Bantu Holomisa.
No, I didn't take a picture with the general.
Didn't you?
No, I was too scared. Let's get
to us. Then the only one left on your bucket list is Becky Kale. We'll have to get him in soon. Thank you, Justice.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's every week. Justice Malala, and lots of insight there into all the things that are going on in this crazy country at this crazy time.
This is CliffCentral.com.